This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Confident shot blocked by Hedman. Score! Burakovsky on the follow-up! And game one goes to the Avs in overtime.
I mean, it feels amazing. I think we really battled through this whole game. We had a little mental breakdown in the second period, but I think we bounced back in the third. And, awesome job by the boys.
You say mental breakdown. Like, what does that mean?
This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's the Adam Gold Show. Welcome to the program. Man, there's a lot going on. It was a heck of a game last night, by the way.
Yeah.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. Might have to talk about Rory McIlroy's golf shirt, which I like. It's annoying some people, but I kind of like it.
The whole point is people are talking about
it. Oh, talking about a golf shirt. It doesn't say, it doesn't have like shots at Greg Norman on it. See, that would be really good if McIlroy was wearing a golf shirt with sharks all over it.
Yes.
That would be great. All
just
right. We got
eating a number 21.
We got, does that sub place that has the numbered sandwiches, do they have a 21? By the way, I don't even understand.
I mean, Jersey Mike's?
Jersey Mike's, yes.
Yeah.
I have the app on my phone. I don't even understand, like, they have, like, random numbers for subs.
Yeah, I don't know how, just, I guess maybe.
It's like a number 68.
Sure.
Do they have 68 different subs?
I don't know.
We should call them and find out.
Maybe that's the fun of it, though.
Yeah, just a random number.
Exactly.
Sub number 74.
Exactly. It's much easier to remember a Jacob Slavin than it is like a 13.
Than a Max Domi.
Yes.
All right.
One's very forgettable.
Hey, we're on TV. You can follow us on the television. Apple, Android, Roku, Fire TV, WRALSportsFan.com, 1257 if you're local to the Raleigh, and WRAL TV5 viewing area. You can watch us on Spectrum Cable at 1257, also 34.1 on an antenna, again, local to Raleigh. We got tons of things to talk about, so let's go. All right, we got game one. We got game six. We got round one of the U.S. Open. Serena returns to Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Right? I've been meaning to mention this for 3 days. Finally had to write it into the Open. That's a huge, huge deal. And we got to talk fixtures.
Yes.
At some point we will. But we're going to start with what really is a dirty word or a dirty phrase in Boston. Game six. Mm. Red Sox fans will understand why game six is a dirty word. All right. Jason Tatum and the Celtics, they will tell us where they are on the championship timeline tonight. Do they have the medal? Do they have what it takes right now to win a championship? Or are they still a year and maybe a piece away?
I think, you know, I could be better at finishing. Obviously, I think I'm shooting the ball well outside, you know, the three. But finishing, playing more off 2 feet, and just being more in control, you know, attacking the rim, whether it's making a play for myself or, you know, finding an open man.
Look, fourth quarters have been a problem for Jason Tatum. They've been a problem for Boston apart from game one, mm-hmm. right? Game one where it looked like the Warriors were going to run away, and then Boston turned the tables on him in the fourth quarter. Boston has not been good enough. Tatum has not been good enough in the fourth quarters, and that's really what got them in this game, in game five. We keep watching these games and Boston looks like the better team and it doesn't matter, which means that there is something missing. But at home tonight, what does Jason Tatum think?
Great being back home. You know, it's the last home game of the season. Looking forward to being in front of the crowd, you know, knowing that they're going to be behind us and giving us that extra boost of energy as they have my whole career. You know, it's going to be extremely loud in here, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a great atmosphere.
There's no question about that. Warriors got by in Game 5 without a Steph Curry performance, right? They did not get great Steph Curry. But because of guys like Andrew Wiggins and Klay Thompson, who has been looking very much like a serviceable Klay that helps you win, they were able, by the way, they gave them 47 points combined, and they were able to get the Warriors through.
It is very hard to close out a series, and this is a very good team, and we know they're going to play with a sense of desperation. So for us to match that or exceed that, it's going to take the most effort we've had to give all year.
I've liked, you know, we talked about what they need from Klay Thompson. They don't need Klay to carry them. They just need Klay to be reliable and productive. He doesn't have to go for an enormous number. He had 21 points. He wasn't dominant in Game 5. He was good. They just can't have bad Klay. Now, they could have bad Klay and win if Steph Curry goes bonkers. But if you're Boston, and we're going to talk about this a lot later, Kanata Edwards actually going to join us in studio today. If all they really need is Klay to be good, right? But Boston is going to probably defend exactly as they defended in Game 5. I wouldn't change anything if I were Boston. Their defense was not the problem. It was their offense that was the problem. And honestly, I think it was also Golden State's defense that forced Boston. And this is why I said earlier that I'm not sure that Boston might not be a piece away. I don't think they necessarily need, a pure point guard.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it seems like their offense is basically Jason Tatum create for us.
Yeah.
At times, Jaylen Brown, too. But mostly, it's Jason Tatum create. And that puts a lot of pressure on Jason Tatum, which is why his turnovers are up.
Mm-hmm.
Golden State's defending him pretty well. They don't have anybody else that is really a creative offensive player. They've got a bunch of guys that can make shots, but right now they are running their offense essentially through Jason Tatum, and they might need some help for Jason Tatum that they can't get from their current roster. Maybe Derek White can give them a little bit, but right now it's all about Jason Tatum. And if he's not having a great night, like his game one where he had 13 assists, even though he shot poorly, they'll take that again. They'll take it again. Mm-hmm. If Tatum is going to be productive in that regard. But right now, there's another conversation to have, and we'll have this with Nada, about what this means for Steph Curry, this might mean for Steph Curry. But I hesitate to get into that too much right now, simply because I mean, I think they're going to lose tonight. I think the Celtics are going to win Game 6 tonight. And we're going to have this question, have this conversation again on Friday, tomorrow, and maybe even on Monday or Tuesday when it's all over, right? We're going to be talking about big picture, what this means for Steph Curry if the Warriors are to win this title. Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible, because here's one thing, Adam. Taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they aren't familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do offer you your very own tax and retirement plan that will help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuda. All right, to the other finals.
Conference shot blocked by Hedman. Score! Burakovsky on the follow-up! And game one goes to the Avs in overtime.
That was a fun hockey game last night. Absolutely brilliant play. Stanley Cup finals have given us the best possible series.
Yes.
Right? Look, we all know I am a Hurricanes fan. I do the Canes Corner podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. We'll have another episode coming up probably early next week. We have the two-time champs with the best goalie on earth versus what I believe is really the best team in the entire NHL in Colorado. Tampa versus Colorado. Tampa's got it all, but they're not as good as they were a year ago. Think about that third line that was so good. Yanni Gourde's in Seattle. Blake Coleman's in Calgary. Barkley Goodrow is in New York with the Rangers. Alex Killorn, shockingly enough, does not have a playoff goal.
Really?
Can't believe that Alex Killorn does not have a playoff goal. He hasn't played that well either, so based on what I've watched from Alex Killorn, I'm not surprised. But Alex Killorn is a really good player. So they're not getting... Really, they're getting no depth scoring. You know, Nick Paul had a couple of goals. Brandon Hagel's got a couple of goals. Mikhail Sergachev scored another goal last night. But basically, in the series that Tampa just beat the Rangers in six games, Tampa scored 16 goals in the series. 12 of those goals came from the top line of Kucherov, Stamkos, Andre Palat. Kucherov and Palat did combine on the third goal, the tying goal, which was an absolute stroke of brilliance again by Nikita Kucherov. It's just amazing. But so Tampa's been a top-heavy offensive team. So they have not yet brought the full arsenal to the playoffs yet, but they're getting by because they are elite defensively and they have the best goalie. With that said, Colorado probably does have the better team top to bottom, other than Darcy Kemper, who's okay. Again, I think Colorado in front of Darcy Kemper is just amazing. And that might be enough. They might not need great goaltending to win a Stanley Cup. They might not. But they're deeper offensively, and that depth showed in overtime when Andre Burakovsky, who had the game winner, after scoring just once so far in the playoffs.
I mean, it feels amazing. I think we really battled through this whole game. We had a little mental breakdown in the second period, but I think we bounced back in the third. And, awesome job by the boys.
When you say mental breakdown, like, what does that mean?
Totally drowned out.
Couldn't hear anything. That's Emily Kaplan on the bench talking to Andre Burakovsky. Look, Burakovsky is one of the few guys with Stanley Cup Finals experience, right? He is one of the few that have Stanley Cup Finals experience with, he did that with Washington. Here's an interesting factoid, if you will. You might have heard it last night, but we knew this going in. That Burakovsky now has three goals against Andrei Vasilevsky in the playoffs because he scored two goals in Game 7 as Washington beat Tampa to advance to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2018, the one they won. And then Burakovsky left Washington in the offseason, signed with Colorado. He's been with the Avs, and now he has another goal. So that's pretty good. He's got three goals against the brick wall. That is Andre Vasilevsky. By the way, they were bashing Vasilevsky for allowing, it was before the third goal, which he had no chance on, on a 5-on-3. He could have stopped the second goal. And he sort of did, but it leaked through. And then I guess it was Landeskog kind of pushed it over the goal line. Rantanen took the shot. Landeskog finished the play. But Vasilevsky was fine last night. Yeah. He wasn't otherworldly. He wasn't the .995 save percentage guy from Game 7's past. But he was good last night. the least of the worries for somebody who is rooting for Tampa, maybe you have money on the Lightning, the least of your worries is Tampa's goaltending. The least of it. Now, Tampa needs to get some other players going. They need to get, you know, Braden Point came back into the lineup. He skated on I think he skated on the third line last night.
It was the third line, I think.
He skated on the third line. You know, Tampa's got Palat with Kucherov and Stamkos. I think Point skated with, Hagel and Nick Paul, was it?
Sounds right.
Or it might have been a second line. They're all over the place. But Tampa's still trying to figure out exactly who they are. All right, shall we talk golf, Dennis Cox?
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
Scott Mischa from the Examiner and Global Golf Post joining us on the Adam Gold Show. Full disclosure, because Rory McIlroy is, you know, sort of winding down his opening round. We taped this a few minutes before the show actually began. Rory's off to a very good start. We won't give the score because that may change, especially since I just saw him driving into the rough. But I want to go back to, I want to start really last week. Could the PGA Tour have had a better winner at the Canadian Open?
No, they couldn't possibly have asked for a better, even just a show between Rory and JT and Finau and Sam Burns. I mean, that's exactly what they needed last week. But I'm not sure that's enough to save them. We'll see where this thing goes. There's a lot of rumored defections coming that are bigger in name and scope and age than the guys who've gone so far, and it could make a big difference, you know, in the PGA Tour's future.
Yeah, okay. I've promised people that I'm going to be a live free event, but you kind of piqued my interest here. I anticipate that there will be more big names going, but I'm not sure that any of those big names, unless they are fully exempt into major championships for the next several years, will really matter, because there aren't that many needle movers on the PGA Tour. Like the big one is the guy who won last week. Bryson DeChambeau is a needle mover, and he's exempt into majors for a while, based on his U.S. Open win in 2020. But I think they'd survive Bryson's absence. Who else could possibly, you know, go, unless we're talking about a lot of defections? Because if Koepka were to leave, I mean, Koepka barely plays now.
Right. But, you know, Koepka certainly had an opportunity to tell us he wasn't.
I agree.
And there are some other names up there. I mean, you know, Matsuyama might not be a needle mover over here, but he's a needle mover over there. And that's a guy, that's a
right.
name if he were to go. You know, it's another huge loss. You're talking possibly, you know, the Joaquin Niemans and people like that. You know, who's on the President's Cup team at this point when you start losing all these guys? So the PGA Tour is quaking in its shoes right at the moment, I think. And and they should be.
I agree with you. I have been like, Liv's a long game. They're not here for a year. They're not here for 2 years. They're not here for 4 years. They are here for the long haul. And I think people need to understand that the World Golf Rankings will play a big role in how this whole thing plays out. It looks like it's going to be at least 2 years unless Liv aligns themselves with another tour before they get official World Golf Rankings points, which could damage the Joaquin Niemans of the world if they were to do something like that, or the Xander Schauffele's of the world. And he was rumored to be a part of the defectors a long time ago because they don't have major championship, you know, exemptions going forward, at least not locked in, and you'll fall out of the top 50 pretty quickly if you don't earn points over the next year or so. I want to go back and sort of quote Brooks Koepka here. I don't want to throw a black cloud on the U.S. Open. So I want to go back and talk about the Open and being at a place like Brookline, which is so steeped in history with the USGA, even though it's not a place they have gone very often. This is just the fourth, even though it's a founding member, it's only the fourth time they've brought a U.S. Open to Brookline. So what is it like being there?
Well, I tell you, I think it's a spectacular property and golf course. And we've been talking about here, it's everything you want a U.S. Open to be. It's got quirkiness. It's got old school charm. It looks great on TV. This is what it's all about. And I could not be more pleased to get a chance to cover one of these things here, because I really think it deserves to be in the rotation more often. The problem is its footprint is not big. It's like Marion, mm-hmm. You know, it's like LA Country Club is going to be next year. These are spectacular properties, but they're very difficult to hold a modern major championship on because they're not, they're not big and brawny in terms of space around it. You're in the middle of a community, but it's spectacular. I mean, everybody loves it, and it's got wonderful quirkiness to it.
Yeah, you mentioned it's not necessarily that the golf course is not big, and this is going to play shorter than most U.S. Open courses, not named Pebble Beach. It's that there's not enough room for the infrastructure around it. I know at Marion, when Justin Rose won, they had to use like a neighboring golf course for the infrastructure. Are they doing that here?
Well, no, they've got an extra nine holes here, which is a lot of the infrastructure is on that Primrose nine, of which three of the holes that are in this composite courts that they use are coming off of. So they have a little bit of room. They also have two holes in the middle of their main course where their driving range is. That would be the ninth and tenth course normally on their main golf course here. So they have a little bit of extra room, unlike Marion, for that kind of stuff. But it's still tight. It's tight, and you know, as you know, these major championships are huge mm-hmm. now. The infrastructure is enormous, so it's a lot to put on, and it's a lot to ask of a little community like this. Even though we were talking about Boston, it's still tight quarters.
Yeah, everything in Boston is tight quarters. You've been to Fenway. I mean, there's nothing around Fenway. It's pushed up against the highway.
Exactly. There's a reason there's a big old giant wall in the left field because they can't go any further.
Incredible. Scott Meshaw, the Examiner, and of course, Global Golf Post, joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Who else catches your eye? I know we have, obviously, early in round one, there's going to be names up there that people don't know. Although David Lingmerth nearly won the Players Championship a bunch of years ago. I think the year that Tiger won it, he was in the mix. And he was a past champion at Memorial. So even though he's not necessarily a garden variety name on the PGA Tour, he does have some history. But there are just a bunch of names up there that nobody knows right now. But who else has caught your eye?
Well, the one that I'm enjoying right at the moment is Stuart Hagestad, the mid-amateur, who's, you know, trying to be Francis We Met here in a sea of Harry Bardens and Ted Rays. He was our solo leader there about 10 minutes ago, and he's still on the leaderboard. And so it's exciting to have a guy who's a capable amateur, not a guy who's going to wilt like him, a guy who's got major championship experience, to possibly to be a colorful figure here on the weekend against, I think you're still going to have your John Rahms, you're going to have Rory, you're going to have Shane Lowry, who's going to be very popular wearing a Celtics shirt later today.
Oh, is he really?
He's got a Celtics logo on the back of his shirt that he's going out in today. There's nothing like pandering to the local Boston Irish community, but now you're going to get the rest of Boston behind you. I think there's a lot of good names who are going to show up, because not many people are shooting themselves out of it right now. It's a real cluster of people from two under to two over. So nobody's really going to fall out. So I think, you know, the cream will rise to the top eventually. And I think, you know, I'm surprised to see Morikawa, to be honest, having a good start, because he came in downplaying his chances, saying he doesn't have that, you know, precious baby cut that he usually plays with working right now.
Said he didn't have it. But remember last year in front of the Open Championship how he said, I'm just trying to learn how to play Lynx golf. Then he went over and missed the cut at the Scottish Open. Morikawa was one of my picks to do well this week. I really like his – I love his game for this type of a golf course.
Exactly. And I've got him in my fantasy pool too. I'm hoping that he's – maybe his comments are sort of the verbal reaction like Hideki Matsuyama when he starts taking his hands off the club. You know it's going close.
All right, let me ask you one more question, and it unfortunately for the listeners involves Liv. What type of help, Scott Mishaw, or backing will the PGA Tour receive from the four major championships? Mike Wan very succinctly answered a question. Do you foresee the rules changing for essentially entrance into the U.S. Open in the future, which was really a question, would they ban players for certain reasons? And he said, yes. We all know that the majors don't like what's going on with LIV, but will they do anything about it?
Well, he more accurately said, could you foresee? And he said he could foresee. He didn't say
what he meant.
But, you know, he's also part of the World Golf Rankings board. So that's really the tricky component where they can really help the PGA Tour by denying world ranking points to these guys, which means, as you said earlier, they'll fall out quickly. And if you don't have previous exemptions, you can't get in. Augusta's the wild card. And at the moment, there could be 8 or 9 former Masters champions in this league. That gets tricky. We'll see what they do. I know they don't like it. They would love to be able to support it, but can you say no to 8 or 9 past Masters champions coming and playing in your field? That's going to be interesting what we see here. But you know, they're part of the possible solution, but the PGA Tour has to do an awful lot more on their own to make this work. They've got to keep the Rorys and Rahms and Justin Thomases and Morikawas of the world in the fold. If they start losing too many of those guys, well, then they're in trouble.
Yeah, the first three guys are not going. They have essentially backed themselves into the they have put themselves into the PGA Tour's corner. Very few others have been so publicly supportive of the PGA Tour. Very few others, which means that everybody's got a price. I don't think those first three really do until the PGA Tour is no longer the best place to play. Scott Mishaw, I appreciate your time. Go root for Shane Lowry and his Celtics logo.
I will. Thanks, man.
Should be a blast. By the way, Rory McIlroy, 3 years ago now, wore a Raptors jersey when he won the Canadian Open in 2019.
Yeah, that's right.
That was actually went to a finals game as well. He might not have worn it, but he had it with him on the golf course as Rory was shooting 61 to beat Brooks Koepka to win the Canadian Open in 19. He successfully defended 3 years later because there was no Canadian Open in 2020 and 2021. All right, when we come back.
By the way, Rahm just hit a long birdie putt to close out his round, 1 under.
Again, man, the Rory McIlroy is on top of the leaderboard with 2 holes to play today. He's 3 under par. Rahm's 1 under. Justin Thomas tees off in about an hour. Those three guys, right now, they are the flag bearers. Like if this was an Olympic team, if the PGA Tour was an Olympic team, those three guys would combine to carry the flag for, and Rory really is carrying the flag, but he'd be flanked by Rahm and Thomas. And I do want to keep Liv out of the conversation for the next couple of days, but it is an inevitable part of talking about the sport now. This is why I understood what Brooks Koepka was getting at the other day, where he doesn't want to talk about it because it's unfair to the U.S. Open. I would argue that there are other motivations for Brooks Koepka, but it is unfair to the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
It is. To me, it's the hardest major to win. and it deserves its own conversation. But because of what's going on in the sport, it is inevitable that it's going to be kind of overshadowed by what's going on. But as we get later in the tournament, we're still in the first round, first half of the first round. As we get later in the tournament, it will be entirely about the leaderboard. And right now, it looks like a pretty good leaderboard, considering what names are dotting it. We spoke with the folks from, I think it was sportshandles.com, about the potential for North Carolina to maybe get mobile sports betting. It's just sports betting at places not named, not casinos in Cherokee. And we talked to Brian Murphy from WRAL-TV5, sports investigative reporter, about this a couple of weeks ago. And we thought it was a formality, and Brian joins us once again on the Adam Gold Show. You can follow him on Twitter at MurphNNC. As of Monday, Brian, we did not know if the House Judiciary Committee here was going to be able to get it on the docket and discuss it and get it moving, because the legislative session ends on the 30th. Do you have new reporting on this, sir?
I do. The House Judiciary Committee, which is the first of three House committees that's going to have to hear this, will hold a hearing on Tuesday, next Tuesday, on Senate Bill 688, which is the main, the main sports gambling bill that passed the Senate. Further, they will also hear what's called a trailer bill, basically amendments to Senate Bill 688, which will be in form of a separate bill. They'll also hear that bill on Tuesday, and that bill raises the tax rate, raises fees, broadens the bill in some ways, tightens it in other ways. I'm still going through a preliminary draft of that bill right now, but it raises the fee from $500,000 to $1 million to get one of these licenses. Mm-hmm. It raises the fee to get a renewal from $100,000 to $1 million. It raises the tax rate from 8%. It looks like they've changed the way the tax is calculated, but it will go to about 14%. So lots of changes that will bring more revenue to North Carolina, more revenue to taxpayers, less in the hands of the sports wagering operators. This was the moment we kind of been waiting for.
Yeah.
I've reported that this trailer bill was coming. It's been held up by language and getting everybody to sign off. Still not 100% done is what I'm being told. But I have the preliminary draft, and it should be ready to roll on Tuesday.
All right, so big picture question here, and then we'll get into the minutiae of it. Brian Murphy from WRAL-TV5, sports investigative reporter. So we're meeting again on the 21st, which is next Tuesday. And again, the legislative session ends the 30th. How quickly do they get from those meetings and those committees and that language and those two bills to the point where they're voting on it? And because there's another bill, does it have to also go back to the Senate?
Yeah. So, a lot of people are used to the legislative process being very slow and taking a long time. And sometimes it does. But having covered the state legislature, when they want something to move, it moves. And it can move very quickly. Bills get written in the morning, voted on in committee in the afternoon, and passed in the big chamber by the evening.
Okay.
So if they've got the agreements that I've been told they have the votes to pass this, it could move very quick. I don't think we'll see a vote next week. So I think we'll be looking at a vote in the final week of the session as they try to get out before the July 4th holiday weekend.
So if that does get voted on and passed, when does this – When can I go out and bet on the Panthers plus five against the Browns?
Sure. To answer your previous question, because I didn't totally get to that, the second bill would have to go back to the Senate, but
okay,
not the first bill. So it's going to take some time. There's going to be a process, but they think they can get this done. As to the more important question, when you can go bet on the Panthers plus five, it's likely, I had heard September, October. The timeline I heard today is closer to the beginning of the year, so they'd like to get it up and running in time for the bowl games, in time for the NFL playoffs, obviously in time for the Super Bowl. There's a lot of a process. In the original bill, and I haven't seen this yet in the new bill, the Idaho, I mean, the North Carolina Lottery Commission, which would run this, would have 60 days to accept or deny an application. And then you got to imagine that these companies, which are up and running in many states around the country, would be able to get operational very quickly. I don't know if 60 days is a legitimate time frame. So I think we could be looking at, you know, post-Thanksgiving.
Post-Thanksgiving. First of all, is it weird that the Lottery Commission would be running this? Is this common in other states?
It's pretty common in other states.
Okay.
Although Tennessee had the Lottery Commission in charge and found that the industry is just changing too much.
Right.
It's too complex. And they created their own sports wagering advisory council, and that is dedicated solely to sports wagering. You look at some of the numbers that are coming out of other states. New York had over $1.2 billion bet in the month of May.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee and Virginia, I haven't seen their May numbers. Their April numbers were around $400 million. There should be enough revenue to get a regulatory board up and running that can really handle the issues and not be tacked on to something like the Lottery Commission. I think we'll see how the Lottery Commission is able to handle it and then, you know, what they spin off in the future to really regulate this industry.
Yeah, but one of the things that caught my eye was that Indiana became the latest state to go over $1 billion in gross revenue the previous month. Iowa has also cracked that, I believe. I mean, it's just so much. Initially, there's not going to be as much money, but down the road, there is so much money. And I think New York's tax rate is somewhere in the neighborhood of 25%. And all the companies that would run it, whether it's MGM or DraftKings or whatever, they're all like, yeah, whatever, we'll pay it, because they know what the revenue is.
Right. New York's rate is 51% of gross revenue.
Wait, 51?
51%. But when you think about it, their monthly handle was $1.2 billion in May. I don't know how much they paid out in winnings to get to their gross revenue. But when you're talking about numbers at that scale, you can pay 51%, because the part that you're taking in is so enormous. Obviously, I was told that North Carolina's market could be bigger than Virginia's market. Virginia is averaging somewhere around about $400 million per month in bets. If North Carolina is a little bigger than that, we're talking maybe $450 million. Now, that's just in bets. Obviously, a lot of people win, so that's not what the operators are making, but that's a scale of the business that's happening.
All right, next time we talk, and hopefully let's do this next week, I'll set betting lines on what margin it passes the House and Senate by, and how quickly we get this up and running. Brian Murphy, at Murph in NC, WRAL Sports investigative reporter. Thank you very much, my friend.
Thank you.
You got it. I'm encouraged now. I'm encouraged that we'll be able to do this by Thanksgiving. Come on. We got a whole football season. All right. Hopefully we'll be able to get this done.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997, with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.